Hello, it's Tom Rowe, and it's Turn on the News you're tuned into. A daily look at radio art, radio news, media news, and more. Tonight we are going to listen to a mystery guest. We'll also tune into the Donner Party and some Sublime Frequencies. We've got news about CISPA, SOPA, and other evil acronyms. And, of course, we're going to revisit the Titanic disaster 100 years ago this week that led to massive radio changes. Go to newsroom.3103.9.org or 3103.9.org to learn more about transmission arts, radio art, and more. Tuned in to Turn on the News. Go to newsroom.3103.9.org for more information about anything you hear here, including links to international sources of radio art, radio news, and more. Behind us is Jaw Division with Isolation Dub. And over at the Broadcast Law blog, David Oxenford previews the Federal Communication Commission's April 27th monthly open meeting. Oxenford looks at the agenda and has some comments about it. He writes, "In one expected action, though perhaps moving more quickly than many thought possible, the FCC has indicated that it will adopt an order in its proceeding requiring TV broadcasters to place and maintain their public files on the Internet. The second broadcast item will adopt rules for channel sharing by TV broadcasters as part of the plan for incentive auctions to entice TV broadcasters to give up some of their spectrum for wireless broadband use. Finally, the FCC proposes to adopt a notice for public recommendation on whether to amend current policies so as to permit non-commercial broadcasters from interrupting their regular programming to raise funds for organizations other than the station itself." That's a notice of proposed rulemaking, excuse me. The first item is to determine whether to require the broadcasters to maintain an online public inspection file. It's a controversial issue about which Broadcast Law and Turn on the News has reported on before. It came out of a Future of Media report, later renamed Report of the Information Needs of Communities, released last year. And hopefully, eventually, it will go beyond television stations, but require all broadcast entities to put their public files online. Tony Hoffman at PCMagazine.com, PCMag.com, gives a long, exhaustive look at the radio aspects of the Titanic disaster 100 years ago today. Radio pioneer Guglielmo Marconi had provided two-way radio systems to send and receive continental Morse code to ocean liners since 1904. By 1912, Marconi held a dominant position in the fledgling wireless communications industry. And the Titanic carried a 5-kilowatt spark gap transmitter that operated at wavelengths of several hundred meters, had an effective range of up to 400 miles in daytime and 2,000 miles at night under good conditions. The ship also carried a battery-powered emergency transmitter. A four-wire antenna was strung up between the ship's two masts. Assigned to the station were two Marconi operators, senior operator Jack Phillips, who turned 25 the day after the Titanic set sail, and 22-year-old junior operator Harold Bride. Radio was a young man's game in those days, as new technologies are often adopted first by the young, and radio and ham radio operating in the United States became something of a craze early in the century. Anyway, that's my added notes. I'm not reading from the Tony Hoffman report in PC Mag, excuse me, which does chronicle how the ship's transmitter received messages on April 13th and 14th about icebergs. Oh, but actually, the night of the April 13th and 14th, the transmitter broke down, and the two operators spent much of the night fixing it. Over the course of the next day, they received three warnings from other ships indicating that icebergs and field ice lay in Titanic's path. So perhaps if the transmitter had not broken on the 13th and 14th, and they would have received even more messages about the icebergs, and perhaps one could guess that maybe they might have taken more messages seriously than just the three they got. Operators passed these messages on to the bridge but failed to deliver several other ice reports, and at least one warning received 9:40 p.m. from the Mesaba, which told of heavy pack ice and large icebergs. At the time, one of the two radio operators was off-duty and asleep, and the other was working through heavy telegram traffic with the Marconi station in Cape Race, Newfoundland. Of course, the captain never altered course because of those radio warnings. And then the ship eventually, of course, got hit by the iceberg. Let's see. That chronicles the night. At around 11 p.m., Phillips heard a loud transmission from the Californian, the source of the previous ice warning, saying the ship was now surrounded by ice and that they had stopped for the night. This was a general message to all ships rather than a distress call. Phillips, who was still trying to complete his telegram traffic, curtly brushed off the Californian's operator, Cyril Evans, telling him to shut up as he was trying to work Cape Race. With spark gap transmitters, it was hard not to swamp nearby signals, and the Californian was then barely 20 miles away. Evans, the Californian's sole Marconi operator, had been on duty since 7 a.m., and he retired for the night at 11:30. About 20 minutes later, the Titanic, much nearer the now radio-silent Californian, struck the iceberg with a glancing blow. Well, it says at the Senate hearing, the California members later testified they, in the ice when they were stopped, they saw a ship on the horizon, which they tried to signal with a Morse lamp. The ship appeared to be listing, and it fired flares. By 2 a.m., the ship was barely visible. It's unclear why the California didn't try to turn on its wireless. Anyway, you can read this full story at PCMag.com. The label Sublime Frequencies goes around the world chronicling radio sounds across the world. This is from their Radio Java album. It's called Radio Surabaya.
dulur-dulur gendinge sampun rampung lan juga iklo di mata akan mati.
Next up, the CBS television show I've Got a Secret in 1960 gave almost 10 minutes of airtime to avant-garde transmission art. Tune in now.
Hi there. Now, may we have our next contestant, please? Will you come in? Would you tell our panel, please, what your name is and where you're from?
My name is John Cage. I'm from Stony Point, New York.
Mr. Cage, and he is from New York. Now, Mr. Cage is a musician. He is a composer. He teaches a course in music at the New School here in New York. Now, Mr. Cage, if you'll whisper your secret to me, we'll show it to those folks out there, huh? All right. Well, that's very interesting. And there must be more. Squarely to our producer, Chester, in this event, we have a magnificent demonstration to make. Should we skip the game?
It's up to you.
It's up to me. I'll go for it because I would like to have a discussion period open at the end of this. Mr. Cage, we're going to skip the whole game because we want to have time for what's to come. All right. I would like to tell you that Mr. Cage's secret is that he's going to play one of his musical compositions tonight. He is probably the most controversial figure in the musical world today, and when you hear his performance, if you will forgive me, you will understand why. The instruments that he will use include a water pitcher, an iron pipe, a goose call, a bathtub, 5 radios all hooked up, and what is the latest status? Are they hooked? Are they working or not? I'll explain this later. They're not. And a grand piano. Now, Mr. Cage, I know that you teach a course in experimental sound at the New School.
Experimental music.
Experimental music.
Yes.
Will you tell us quite seriously whether or not you consider what we're about to hear music? No tongue-in-cheek, but serious.
No, perfectly seriously, I consider music the production of sound. And since in the piece that you will hear I produce sound, I would call it music.
You will call it music, all right. Now, lest you think this is some sort of a stunt, I would like to show you a review of a new album that Mr. Cage has made. This was in last Sunday's New York Herald Tribune. It is not entirely favorable. It says, however, on records, his weird sounds, bells, cymbals, prepared pianos, and electronic devices exert a surprising degree of charm and affability. Then it goes on to say that certain compositions of his are really a delight to the ear. This is something that cannot be said of quite a few other of the Cage items. But the Tribune takes him seriously as a composer, and this as a new art form. Inevitably, Mr. Cage, these are nice people, but some of them are going to laugh. Is that all right?
Of course. I consider laughter preferable to tears.
Nice man. All right, let's show the a panel, first of all, so we can get full scope for our cameras. Will you pull the desk back, please? Sorry about the game, but I think the time is more valuable.
I have an idea about the radios. Instead of turning them on, as I have written to do, I will hit them every time I turn them on. Am I supposed to turn them on?
Well, now, let me say this. The audience doesn't know what we're talking about.
Okay.
Let me say this. That Mr. Cage has consented to play this composition not as it was written, because a few hours before airtime, a jurisdictional union dispute arose between two unions as to who had the jurisdiction of plugging in the five radios. It has not been resolved as of right now, and so Mr. Cage has consented to do this, provided I make the announcement that the two unions came to a dispute and couldn't settle.
Well, I've decided to, instead of turning them on as I would normally, I will hit the top of each radio instead. That will produce the sound of some kind. Then when I turn them off, I will knock them off the table.
I'm with you, boy. All right, let's see this instrument.
Great, thank you.
That's it. Yes, the title of the composition is what, Mr. Cage?
Water Walk, because it contains water and because I walk during its performance.
That figures, doesn't it? All right, now, also, two things I want you to notice. Over here, Mr. Cage has a tape recording machine, which will provide much of the... Will you touch the machine so we can know where it is? Which will provide much of the background. Also, he works with a stopwatch. The reason he does this is because these sounds are in no sense accidental in their sequence. They each must fall mathematically at a precise point. So he watches his watch as he works. He takes it seriously. I think it's interesting. If you are amused, you may laugh. If you like it, you may buy the recording. John Cage and Water Walk. Thank you.
Next up, a song about the transmission of disease, and then listening to the radio late at night.
Late in the evening, and before, once or twice I've been on the floor, but I never loved no one the way that I love you. And it was late in the evening, and all the music seeping through.
That was Paul Simon with Late in the Evening, and before that, a Donner Party with Sickness on Turn on the News. You've been listening to Turn on the News, Free 103.9's daily look at radio art, radio news, media news, and more. You can tune in to Turn on the News at free103.9.org, on Free 103.9 online radio, and at WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA, in upstate New York.